Discussions in Depth Psychology is powered by Pacifica Graduate Institute. Your host is Bonnie Bright.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Discussions in Depth Psychology. I'm Bonnie Bright, and this series, which is powered by Pacifica Graduate Institute, is dedicated to bringing you discussions with some of the individuals who are making really important contributions to the field of depth psychology. And today, my guest is Brian Falk, who has practiced traditional Chinese medicine for over 6 years and who is completing his dissertation in the PhD program in depth psychology with a specialization in somatic studies at Pacifica. Thanks so much for spending some time with me today, Brian.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
I'm really thrilled to be able to talk to you today because we're going to be talking about something that you have a background in that I've never really had a conversation with anybody in detail about, and that is Chinese medicine. So I'm really looking forward to that and to understanding if and how there might be some correlations between Chinese medicine and depth psychology. So we'll go there in just a moment, but first let me just read your bio for everyone so that they have some more background on you. Brian holds a master's degree in Chinese medicine and depth psychology. He has a medical clinic in Carpinteria, California, where he has been practicing traditional Chinese medicine for over 6 years. He is on his last chapter of a PhD dissertation in somatic depth psychology at Pacifica, and his dissertation is titled Smell Your Reflections on the Soul's Meaningful Scent Images. In addition to his private medical practice in Carpinteria, he is a teacher and a writer. So, Brian, I'm so excited, as I mentioned, to be able to talk to you about this. And also, we're going to get into the dissertation that I just mentioned there, Smell Your Reflections. Uh-huh. I think that's such a fascinating grabber to take us into the conversation. But why don't we start first with the Chinese medicine?
Sure.
I'm wondering if you can provide us with a definition or your definition of Chinese medicine and what it looks like for a practitioner. What is it exactly? And what are some of the benefits that Chinese medicine provides?
Yeah, the medicine goes back quite a long ways, and what we're typically seeing today is more of a modernized version of it. But it's really, the medicine is based in a philosophical tradition, primarily from the roots of Taoism and later Confucianism, but it's essentially a system that's rooted in nature. Over thousands of years, the Chinese developed a very comprehensive way of looking at humans in relationship to the cosmos, and so it can also be seen as a type of cosmology. So the modalities that are used primarily are acupuncture, herbal medicine, massage, cupping. Those are the primary treatment tools that the Chinese medicine uses. So it differs in several ways from allopathic medicine. It has an element of prevention as one of the biggest differences. So the Chinese have traditionally used it to maintain and prevent illness. But really the big difference is the philosophical starting point and the way that the Chinese conceptualize disease and health. And that to me has always been the challenge and the most interesting part of it is just a different philosophical frame. So that's probably the jumping off point when I'm looking at how to talk about it with other people because it is coming from a different place.
Yeah, I can really tell. And of course, what occurs to me instantly as you start talking about that is Jung's profound interest in the Eastern arts and sciences. And of course, I'm sure you found some correlations there. But before we go there, I was just curious, what was it that led you to your own interest in Chinese medicine? Had you experienced it as a client or patient?
So surprisingly, I had not received acupuncture or had really taken many herbs prior to deciding to go into that medical tradition. But since I was a little kid, I always wanted to be some kind of doctor, and I knew that that would be my path, but I just didn't know what direction. And I was in my last year of studying psychology actually at UCSB, and I was volunteering and doing internships, looking at different directions in the medical field. And I had two different people that introduced me to Chinese medicine, and I went to the school and just had a half an hour conversations with the admissions director, and she started telling me about the philosophy of the medicine. And within a couple of minutes, I was like, yes, that's what I'm looking for. I felt a resonance with the philosophy of the medicine and the kind of way that I wanted to be as a doctor or helper in the world. It was very simple. It was based in nature. I could go anywhere in the world and do it. It seemed like it was an up-and-coming profession, and I could see myself doing this for the rest of my life. So I felt I got really lucky in finding that because I didn't have any direct experience prior to that.
Yeah, as we would say in depth psychology, your daimon was at work there, you know, whatever
that's
that
right.
inner spirit
yeah,
is
that's right.
pulling
I
you
feel
into
like
your
sometimes
future.
Actually, the medicine kind of found me in a way, because it's been like that relationship. I've been pushed and guided and really supported since the beginning in that respect.
Yeah, definitely. That's really great. I always like to hear that because, you know, I mean, a lot of people are struggling to find their calling. And so when it's something that has become that clear or really kind of hit people over the head, so to speak, I guess.
Right.
It
and
makes
that's,
it so
you know,
much,
that's really what I was trying to find, because I was looking at nursing and physical therapy and all kinds of different things. And I was like, well, this is kind of cool. This is okay. But I wasn't getting that like punch, that hit of like, I really want my hair to be blown back. Something that I was going to be excited about and passionate about. And that's what I was really waiting for. So I was patient enough to find that, but it's not always easy to get that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. I'm laughing because I'm just noticing all the different images that are coming up for us in our conversation, you know, in our language, like I mentioned hitting over the head and you mentioned having your hair blown back. And it's occurring to me that you did your coursework at Pacifica in the somatic program. And so it's kind of interesting for me. Some of these images that are coming up are a little bit more somatic or having to do with the body. Let's talk about that a bit, because you landed at Pacifica in the somatics program there. I'm wondering what the correlations have been that you have found between the Chinese medicine and depth psychology.
Well, those are two big areas to work with, really three. I mean, depth psychology, the tradition of somatics as we understand it, and then Chinese medicine. So there's really three huge areas, and you're bound to find correlations and connections between those two. But in my first year, I was struck by how often, especially going back to like the ancient Greek healing traditions of Asclepius, for example, and a lot of the older medical historical aspects of where a lot of Western ideas have come from, of how similar they were to Chinese thinking, the elements, different aspects of how the body through dreaming can be healed. So initially I was like, okay, great. I found a program that was incorporating the body into it, and being in an environment that allowed expression and freedom of the body was very comfortable to me. But it started becoming more than that. I was realizing that what I intuitively understood about symptoms as I'm working with my patients was that they're meaningful, they're purposeful. And if you're so inclined, the doctor or the patient can investigate those symptoms. And depth psychology was providing a very rich context for the meaning of some of those symptoms. And so that was something that was quite interesting for me, because I was dealing with that on a daily basis, people coming to me with all kinds of different health problems, and to be able to see it through different lenses. So right off the bat, I was able to get another viewpoint, offer another lens through which to look, because the Chinese was one lens, and here was coming in another lens through depth psychology and then also in somatics. I was also noticing, too, that Chinese medicine is actually really imagistic. And that was something that kind of dawned on me later, was the names of the acupuncture points, the way that the Chinese talk about the organ systems, like the liver is the general, the heart is the governor, and even the psychopathology, the way that the Chinese have understood health and medicine is actually really imagistic. And that's what we understand the psyche to be doing all the time, is constantly producing images. And so it was kind of like, wow, this is confirming or resonating in a different way, and really gave me a deeper appreciation for the art of Chinese medicine, because it is both a science and an art. And so the element of beauty that was coming in was, you know, I was looking at the calligraphy and some of the kanji pictographs of the Chinese characters and realizing, wow, these are images that the Chinese were tapping into to understand the body and health and disease. So that was another element that I started to get excited about as I was studying depth psychology.
Mm-hmm. I really appreciate that. I know, I mean, obviously we've often spoken of depth psychology as the images being essentially the language of the soul, and that things can happen, things can come that are generative from those images that sometimes we can't even put language to. You know, it's truly the power of the image that actually speaks to us directly. And you had mentioned just a minute ago that in your work at Pacifica in the somatics program, one of the things that you had realized or discovered there was that the body through dreaming can be healed. I wonder if you can say something more about that, about your own experience of that, or maybe your understanding of how that might actually work in relationship to these kinds of images.
The dream world, in the imaginal world, I think has much more potential than we could ever imagine. When I read the old classical Chinese texts, they had a very limited and kind of, I wouldn't say superstitious, but a very oversimplistic way of looking at dreams. For example, if you dreamt of water, it could mean you have a kidney deficiency. Or if you dreamt of trees, you know, your liver is in excess.
And there hadn't been much development in that area over the centuries. And as I started studying dreams and gaining a deeper appreciation of the psyche, and then was starting to talk to some of my patients about their own dreams and also looking at my own, I was realizing that dreams, I think, have the potential to both show where the roots or origins of a particular pathology or disease lie, and also potentially could give clues to the resolution or clues to their healing. And so I've started to venture in that direction with some of my patients and just opening up the field of, hey, you know, like, have you had any dreams lately, and getting into those a little bit. And I think there's a really untapped region as far as gaining information and access to the unconscious as far as guiding somebody in the direction of healing, even just on the physical level. We understand dreams as being very important on the psychic level, but I think they can also give very important information to us about the physical body too. So, and even death. I mean, I've had a few older patients who have dreamt of seeing their own dead bodies or seeing a lake or river that they have to cross through. And we've had those discussions, you know, of like their impending passing. And to be able to meet people at that level, it adds another element of connection, of being able to deepen somebody into their own human experience, and in this case, through their dreams, if they're open to it. So I think it's a really untapped area that a lot of health practitioners wouldn't even consider venturing into for different reasons, but I certainly am fascinated by that potential resource. I mean, it's a huge part of our lives, the dream world, so I hope to include that more as time goes on.
Yeah, I'm really excited to hear that. I agree with you completely in the power of dreams, and of course, when we start looking at the old Greek Asclepian cults and all of the many cults that really brought dream work into that, I'm sure that they were not just working on the psychological aspects of it, even though that's one thing that I kind of get excited about because of death psychology. But you're absolutely right. I think the healing, even to the physical body, there's a very profound opportunity there to understand that more.
Yeah. And I think my intuition is that the Chinese actually had that understanding, but in the standardization of what we understand by traditional Chinese medicine today, a lot of anything that was psychological, spiritual, was put under the rug during the 50s, during the Communist Revolution. And so I think the textbooks that I've been reading, at least, maybe provide a skewed picture. But I have a sense that that culture at some point in history had deeper understandings of dreams than what we might know now, but maybe not to the extent that somebody like Jung put forth in the last 100 years. So I think we might be venturing into a modern territory of more developed consciousness in that sense, being able to really tune into the images of the psyche and seeing them as a much more personal and in an ally kind of way.
Maybe. Right. On that note, since we're talking about the three fields that you mentioned, the Chinese medicine, depth psychology, and somatics, I mean, there clearly are a lot of correlations and things that are interesting among them all. Have you found that there are contradictions that have been troubling for you, or anything like that showed up that you've had to work through?
Yeah, there have been. There's been a few gaps that I realized. I mean, Chinese medicine really is a complete medical system, and I don't want to discount the ability of that to treat every part of the human. However, there are areas that I think are missing or aren't developed enough, and that includes the idea of the personal and the collective unconscious. That includes ideas like the shadow and the archetypal perspective. Really, that's not really talked about much in Chinese medicine. And so as I was learning depth psychology, I was realizing that there were some gaps in my understanding of the human condition. The psyche's need to fantasize and the importance of the imagination to create. And I'm just simply understanding the archetypal aspect of the doctor and the patient and how easy it is to split those, that the doctor might forget that he himself is a patient and the patient might not be aware that they also have the doctor or healer archetype within them. Mm. The other things that go on in the clinical room, we didn't get taught that kind of stuff. You know, what happens when my patient falls in love with me or I fall in love with my patient, how to deal with that? That was never covered in 4 years of Chinese medical school. The transference, the projections that happen just within the clinic, you know, the container, and I'm touching people and, you know, what's going on between that. There's very little of that understanding or transmission of that knowledge in, I think, most Chinese medical schools. So as I was learning about that, I'm like, whoa, like there's some gaps there. Also, for example, the influence of culture and society itself as a factor. You know, Chinese look at weather, at emotions, at a diet, a lifestyle as primary causes of disease. But they don't really talk so much about society or our culture itself as being sick, and that is a factor of disease. And
there's also this tendency towards looking at emotions as positive or negative and getting rid of transforming so-called negative emotions. And I started to really question some of those ideas as well, of that's maybe not necessarily what the deeper part of this person wants, or that's what's actually being called for. And so it just, the depth psychology piece really filled in a lot of gaps that I felt like I had in my education as a doctor, but also just as a person. You're recognizing those things in the shadows, things that just we're not always aware of. So those are two things that stood out from the beginning.
Yeah, I love that. It really seems like a wonderful mix to bring the two together. And I can't imagine that this is happening very often. I don't know that very many people have had the opportunity to put those two things together, the Chinese medicine and depth psychology, and the third, I guess I should include the somatics piece there. But
yeah,
your point
I'm
about the,
sure,
you know, the culture being diseased and looking at that, I think that's really valuable. And I hope that more people are able to do that. But having your background in the medicine piece of it just seems to be able to ground that really profoundly for me as well. And I can only imagine that that's a really helpful and useful lens to add to what depth psychology often does, which is to sort of assess and analyze the culture and look at the
symbolic meaning.
Yeah,
because, you know, you're right. And it's so easy for somebody to come in and they're either, you know, it's all my fault and what did I do and why is this happening to me? They're contained and stuck within their own personal myth or story of why they hurt, why they're sick. And it's all, what did I do? What's wrong with me? And they fail to recognize maybe other contributing factors. And to be able to hold the larger picture for somebody or myself, there's many different factors going on. There's many different viewpoints. Or conversely, somebody comes in and everything's about somebody else, or they're blaming something external. And to be able to guide them back into their own bodies, and that's where the somatic piece comes in. You know, what's going on from the first person perspective internally? You know, are they feeling dried out, or are they feeling weighed down, and getting into the images rather than some of the conceptual languages, both of Western medicine and Chinese medicine? You can get stuck in some of these abstract concepts. And so I've kind of started to veer away from that as I've understood how important language is, and just to meet somebody where they are and see where they're stuck and what angle or perspective they might not be aware of. And so for me to have a much larger viewpoint or be able to put on different lenses, I think allows much more of a versatile and dynamic way of working with somebody. So I feel very fortunate, and I'd like to think that, you know, I can offer more to people in that sense. So it's exciting, but it also requires a lot more responsibility because I'm aware of a lot more things too. I have to hold, be able to hold and contain more. So it's a little more challenging, more responsibility, but also exciting and, you know, potentially, hopefully more helpful to the person.
Yeah. So, yeah. I would definitely agree with that.
It's a lot.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, that adage comes to mind, where much is given, much is required.
Yeah.
It's a blessing and a curse, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, meanwhile, I want to move on and make sure we have time to talk about your dissertation that you're working on. It sounds so unique and so interesting. So as I mentioned, it's called Smell Your Reflections on the Soul's Meaningful Scent Images. So tell me about that. How did you get started in that? What's the interest in the scent in the first place?
Well, like a lot of good books or research beginnings, it started with an obsession, I suppose. I've been obsessed about smell since I was a kid. I kind of owe that to my father, who was always smelling things, and we talked about smells a lot. It was kind of a running joke in the household. But as I was going through Pacifica and was really considering what I might do my research on, I originally had the idea of doing it on the Chinese idea of stagnation and flow and how things are either moving or they're stuck. And I realized that that was a trap I was falling into, like a lot of young students do, in writing about something they're already familiar with and something that's very big and cosmological. And I realized that I was falling into that trap. So I just started kind of meditating and imagining other things. And I was just constantly getting images of smells. And what I mean by images of smells, the questions of, you know, why do I like certain smells and hate others? And why other people like smells and don't like others? And what is all this about? And how come nobody really talks about smells too often relative to the other senses? And I started feeling like this was kind of a neglected area. I mean, it's written about, but not as much. And I was reading Freud's Civilization and Discontent, and he had a section about humans walking upright and the loss of the olfactory sense. And within a couple week period, I was getting like four or five big hits of smell. And I'm like, I think I got to look into this. So it was really kind of an obsession over time that I couldn't really ignore anymore. And once I did my final oral exam in my last class, and I actually failed that and was forced to redo it, Elizabeth Nelson says, you know, you really should do something related to your dissertation. Just pick one little idea. And I said, okay. And so I looked through some of my notes and I came across a section about the aesthetics of scent, you know, what makes a scent beautiful. And so I did my final remake of my oral exam on the aesthetics of scent. And when I finished that presentation for Elizabeth, she looked at me, she's like, I think you have half your dissertation right here if you want it. And I realized that there was a whole realm here that I was fascinated by and excited about. And so that was the beginning of that. And it kind of evolved over time. Originally, I was thinking about doing how to use smells for health and healing, more of a practical standpoint that I could use in the clinic, because I was already using essential oils in my practice. But what I was realizing when I was using essential oils in my practice, that people were having very specific reactions to the smell. I'd give them peppermint oil, and they'd be like, oh, my gosh, this reminds me of Christmas at Grandma's house 40 years ago. Or one person started crying because she smelled wintergreen, and it brought her back to her grandmother. And I'm like, there's something very important here, and I don't necessarily need to go in this direction of health and healing like I thought. And when I got a hold of one of Hillman's articles, I think it was Image Sense, 1977, I believe, he had a couple pages about using scent as a metaphor for the psyche. And I had one line that caught my attention. It was something like, smells like images are reflections. And I pondered on that for like 2 weeks. And I'm like, I got to investigate this. So that was all the pieces that kind of led me in that direction. So it was really a lovely obsession.
Well, it is a lovely obsession, and assuming that the smells, I guess, that you work with are good ones, at the risk of
even the disgusting scents, I'm obsessed with those. I mean,
yes, and
I just,
of course,
like,
those.
Why something hits you so hard that just makes you repel and disgust? That's just as fascinating to me as the nice one. So, yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about my short foray into French literature when I was in college long ago and reading Marcel Proust and remembering, you know, the temps passé, how his own memory sent him into this completely new world through the smell of the Madeleines as he was walking down the street.
Right.
And your story about the woman who started crying because of the wintergreen scent that reminded her of her grandmother really connected me too. And I do find sometimes that that is such a powerful image, as you said, that can really put us into almost an altered state. Does that come up in your dissertation?
Yeah, I do investigate first, can scent be a psychic image? And if so, what are the elements that go into it? And then later on, how might one connect more deeply to those, particularly the meaningful scent images is what I'm really concerned about. The ones that stay with us, the ones that are very evocative and emotional, how do we give those a little more attention and what could they do for us or what could we do for them, and developing a more intimate relationship with those images. And what I found is that there's this whole, what I call like a internal smellscape. There's a whole world that is constellated when you either smell something directly or you fantasize about a meaningful scent that encapsulates a lot of associations and memories and emotions that are all interconnected and linked up. And so for me, it's something that as we age, we could hold on to. Even as we're younger, we could start to pay attention to more. And it's really just, it's one aspect of our human experience that the psyche, I believe, wants. It wants beauty, and it wants to be pushed towards some kind of evocation and have something to connect with. And smell is part of our environment. So the image piece was key in that, and recognizing not just the physical component of what happens to the body when you have these experiences, but psychically, you know, the lastingness of certain specific images that are very usually quite personal.
Yeah, you're making me remember, actually, even just talking about this, when I was a kid, my mom used to make bread, and my brother could always smell it from like half a mile away. He could always smell when we'd be coming home from somewhere, and he could smell the bread cooking, and I never could. And so that kind of sent me into this memory of it, and I can imagine, I don't know exactly how you work with it, but I can only imagine that it would be possible to maybe recreate some of those scents that we identify that have some meaning to us, and then maybe go into some kind of an active imagination process or some kind of a reflection process that allows us to engage with those and see what comes from
exactly.
that. I mean, the healing potential is really...
Exactly. There is a lot of potential there, absolutely.
Yeah, well, this is really exciting. I'm really thrilled to hear about the work, and I'm also going to be looking very much forward to when you finish it. I hope that ultimately that might become a book, that it might be available for everyone. Do you have plans for once you finish and what you'll do next? You'll be continuing your practice, I assume, and integrating some of these things. What else would you like to do?
Where my libido and eros is going right now is teaching. The main reason that I decided to get my PhD was because I want to teach at a college or graduate level. And writing too, absolutely. But I think at this point in my life, what's more pressing to me, or what I lay in bed fantasizing about, is teaching to young college kids. And whether that's step psychology or Chinese medicine or just general psychology or anything related to both my fields, I think I would be absolutely ecstatic about. And that's my next adventure, is applying for some adjunct teaching positions, because I do want to continue my clinical practice. I love it too much. I don't think I could give that up completely. But if I could get an adjunct position teaching one or two classes, even at a community college, I'd be very happy doing that. If it was in the right context, you know, certainly allow me to do my strange, different type of teaching, because obviously both Chinese medicine and depth psychology are still kind of on the fringes. So the fact that I'm doing two of those and just my own personality, I'd want to be in a situation that would allow some kind of freedom in my ability to develop curriculum and teach the kind of teaching that I want to do, which is quite meaningful and something that I didn't get when I was at UCSB studying psychology, which is very dry and abstract and lacked, you know, heart and meaning. And so that's what I want to get back to the younger college kids, is something that is meaningful and practical and will light their passion.
Yeah. Is that something, Brian, that has really just come to you recently, or have you always known that you wanted to teach?
I think the teaching began the same time as my interest in being a doctor, probably when I was 8 or 9 years old. I can't really separate them. I mean, I spend a good amount of time talking with my patients, and it's some kind of education, whether it's about their diet or explaining different health ideas. And so I do a lot of teaching anyway, and I've always kind of tutored, and I've substituted for the high school. I've done different types of tutoring probably since junior high. And so that's always kind of been there. And so actually the word doctor, I believe the roots is like to teach. So there's something about the doctor-teacher archetypes that are very overlapping for me. And so I just kind of figured that the teaching would happen in its own time as far as what and where and to whom. But I knew that I wanted to do that kind of at a higher level, and the PhD would help me open some doors in that respect. Really, that fire was probably started as soon as I graduated Chinese medicine. As soon as I finished school, I'm like, I just inputted so much stuff. Now I have to output. And now after 5 years of Pacifica, it's like tripled. Like the amount of energy that's moving through me that wants to come out, it's like if I don't teach, I'm going to probably explode or something. So there's a very strong sense of years of input. Now there's a desire for output and sharing what I've been working on for many years with other people. So,
well, that's really exciting to hear. I have no doubt, absolutely, that that's how you're going to end up. It just seems like you are on a path that is, as you kind of alluded to, carrying you. It found you, and it's now carrying you through to see you through that completion. Well, I really appreciate the opportunity to spend a few minutes with you today, Brian. It's been just so fascinating. And again, I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens next and what comes out of this. And to just remind everybody, I've been speaking with Brian Falk, who practices traditional Chinese medicine in Carpinteria, California, and who is completing his dissertation about the soul's meaningful scent images. And that's in depth psychology with a specialization in the somatic studies program there at Pacifica. Thank you so much for spending time with me today, Brian. It's been great.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me, Bonnie. I appreciate it.
You've been listening to Discussions in Depth Psychology, powered by Pacifica Graduate Institute with host Bonnie Bright. Learn more at pacificapost.com or at pacifica.edu.